Well, as we just mentioned, gambling can be compromised in many sports due to kind of fraud and corruption. We've seen that. I remember a Pakistani bowler in international cricket was taking huge money to what he did was called spot fixing for illegal betting for betting markets and was basically rigging outcomes on certain moments in a match. Does it make its way through to major betting markets more than just on that kind of isolated occasion? Is this something that's becoming more and more regular?
Well, I think spot fixing is the biggest danger, as you've alluded to, in terms of integrity. The Tim Simona case recently in the NRL is a good example of that, where you had a player essentially betting against his own team and also betting against the person he anticipated being his opponent scoring the first try. In those sort of situations, you've only got one player who needs to be conducting himself contrary to the norms and rules of sport. And so the integrity of the competition is therefore tainted, not through the actions of a whole team or through a referee or even an entire match, but just one moment in a match.
Now, the most common forms of betting occur through on-field play. For example, a first player to score a try in a game of rugby league. Now, this has been described as a Faustian pact in that, it draws out, players like Tim Simona, betting not only on themselves to score the first try, but also other people. Is it possible that those kind of in-game bets on things like first try score and really quite very specific things, I think you can, bet on a whole range of other much more specific things, is that a line that sports now... the betting in sport is now crossing, do you think, that we're having too many options and too many kind of anachronistic things that people can bet on?
Yeah, I think even in this case, the NRL has recognised that. So the number of what's sometimes called exotic betting options, like the first try, for instance, the number of those has been reduced by about half. So the NRL is... trying to respond, I think, to a sense in which it fears that the great volume of offerings is perhaps something difficult for them to manage in terms of betting integrity. And so they've now refined the options that are available. So that's one step. But the other step, I think, is very important, but... is perhaps not well known, is that the Australian government has just put through a bill, and this bill is called the Interactive Gambling Amendment Bill. Just was passed in Parliament a few days ago. And in essence, what that does is it closes any loopholes that existed in Australia in terms of betting in during play. So previously you had a situation in which some betting during play was possible if you basically had a VPN account and gambled with an offshore provider. That was a kind of a loophole. And there was also a loophole with local providers as well. Now that's going to be closed. So that's actually very different to what happens, say, for example, in Europe, where there's lots of live betting. In which case, for instance, you can bet on somebody who's about to do a serve in a tennis match, whether they're going to serve a fault or not. So that's actually, that kind of betting now is not available in Australia. It kind of was possible if you explored overseas options, but under this new bill, it's now going to be against the law.
Now, just bringing it back to a local context, gambling and live betting seems to have really increased overall in terms of its volume. In fact, in total sports betting per capita, it's risen exponentially over the course of the last 20 years, just in Australia alone. Why do you think that's the case, Darryl?
Well, partly it's the availability of these options. Previously, if you wanted to put a bet on live sport, you pretty much couldn't until, I guess, we have these internet providers. So in part, it's the sort of a provision of technology allowing this, but also it's the expansion of sport gambling, which, of course, really, if you look to Britain and Europe, that's where it really generated its momentum. Australia's kind of, I wouldn't say behind that market, but is followed on, if you like, in terms of what is on offer. And of course, some of the huge British and Irish and European providers now are in Australia, and it's an extremely competitive market.
So what about on the kind of live betting in terms of the advertising for it? That also seems to be quite, in my opinion, I think it's quite pervasive. I can't stand personally seeing all the advertisements during live sports. If I want to watch a game on TV, I have to kind of be subjected to a whole bunch of sports betting advertising. Is there kind of legislation needed to tackle this problem around that?
Yeah, there have been some initiatives to minimise the volume of gambling advertising on sport, particularly during games, where a few years ago you'd have somebody like Tom Waterhouse essentially being a kind of a pseudo-commentator as well as trotting out his thoughts about who was the best prospect in terms of the gambling market. So that has changed, but the volume of advertising outside of the play itself is as substantial as ever. And in part that's because you've got enormous volume of providers. And of course, they can make big money. You mentioned at the beginning that Australians in 2014-2015 gambled $7 billion. Well, out of that, they lost $815 million. So this is an enormous industry.
Thank you very much for joining us there, Daryl. It was a real pleasure speaking to you. I'll just ask one last question, and that is whether or not you think do you think these sports have become too dependent on gambling money or kind of gambling commercial revenue from gambling advertising?
Yeah, from the sponsorship they get. No question. And one of the things we didn't discuss here is money from poker machines as well, which is perhaps the most insidious form of revenue associated with any type of gambling, because it's basically people flushing their money down the toilet.